I am with JP. It is April 16, and I want to welcome you back to Except Politics Today, JP.
How you doing, Doc? I'm proud to be here to bring this beautiful information to the public.
That's great to hear that you've had another mission and you've been given the green light to share that with us. So, yeah, tell us what happened.
We went out from where I work. This happened around 5:30. 6 a.m. in the morning. We all met up, a total of four of us. And we were going into like this bus, right? And this bus, this white bus picked us up. Total 44 passenger bus. It picked us up and we went into the bus.
You're listening to Exopolitics Today with Dr. Michael Sala, your source for the uncensored truth regarding the human, extraterrestrial, global, and political agenda. Click the like button and subscribe to this channel. And now, here is Dr. Michael Sala.
We were dressed in civilian attire, and we were like confused of where we were going. We were heading north, back up there to Alabama and Mississippi. So I noticed on the way we were picking up people, and I noticed that there were pilots, there were officers, there were pilots, different types of pilots, and even pilots from different countries that they told me not to talk about which countries were part of this type of exercise, this type of mission. Well, it was more like a training type slash mission exercise. So the bus started getting full of people. You know, everybody was quiet. Everybody started talking in the back. And then the wave of everybody talking started talking about like where you're from, why are you here. You know, everybody had an idea. But me personally, I didn't know where we were going. So there was a lot of people. Like a total of 32 in a 44 passenger bus. And we drove off. We drove off to North Alabama in that area by Mississippi to a cavern. We enter into this tunnel. It was really, really tight. I don't know how the bus driver took it in there, but if you could put your hands out of the bus, you could feel the rock. on the side. So it was like 3 feet in one side and 3 feet by the other side. That's how tight it was. So making a slight turn, the bus actually, you could feel it like scratching a little bit. And the guy that was driving was like, oops, sorry. Everybody was like laughing when the guy was doing that. It was really interesting. So we go into this cavern and he parks into this bigger place. I did notice the bus going down in the type of ramp style, and everybody was there excited. Like everybody knew, and me personally, I did not know, but it looked like the other people knew what was happening. So when we get to this cavern and we get out, in the distance, there's like a tubular cave that you walk through, and it had lights. And we had to pass through these doors made of like metal. And these doors had insignia on it. And the insignia looked like a flying saucer. And on top, it had another language that I did not recognize. I did not recognize the language or the writing on top of this insignia of that looks like a UFO. The door opens, and then one by one, we enter. I did not know nobody that was there. I think I remember the driver. I seen him a couple times here and there, but I didn't see no other people around that I knew. I noticed people talking in different languages. I did not recognize different language, something like Arabic or maybe Hebrew. I'm not sure. But there was other languages there as well, other pilots there from different places. I guess they decided that this was for everybody to meet up and go to this place. So I asked one of the guys behind me. I said, "Hey, I'm not a pilot. You know, I've flown plane here and there, but I'm not a pilot." You know, he says, "I'm not a pilot either." So I kind of got confused because the people that were picking up were most of them were pilots. So it was a mixture of different types of people that were there. And we entered into this place where we're going one by one. And then that room where that door, that metal door that had the insignia of the flying saucer, I enter it and my whole body started vibrating. And then it stopped. And then you can hear like an intercom type of a voice. "Okay, keep walking, keep going, keep going." So it was guiding us to keep going, keep going. So we enter into this big, big cavern with flying saucer ships already floating. And they were lined up similar to the port that I went to. I think this was the same area, but it was in a different part of this type of base. But these ships were high up. They were at least 20 to 30 feet high, and they were floating and humming. Zoom, zoom. And they were all humming in unison, like all in the same time. Sometimes there was one of them that hummed different, and then it entered into the same frequency, the same hum. And then under these ships, there were Nordic guys aligned to each ship. And then the pilots, they were running to each Nordic that they knew. So there was at least 30 to 40 ships that I was looking at, that it was floating. And I asked the guy next to me, I says, "Hey, what's happening here?" He's like, "Oh, no, it's a type of training that they do. They train the pilots to fly their ships." And I'm like, "Wait, what do you mean they train the pilots to fly their ships?" So yeah, the Nordics, they take the pilots and they're training them how to fly these ships. And I said, "To train how to fly these saucer kind of ships?" So yeah, they have to be connected with their Nordic, and the Nordic, they train them how to use it. So I was like, "Wow, this is exciting that I'm seeing this." So once the pilot approaches the Nordic being, ET, the Nordic raises his hand and the ship starts coming down really slow, really slow, really slow. And when it's like on top of their heads, they just disappear. They go into the ship. But they disappear so quick into the ship that I couldn't see no entrance or nothing. But the pilot was holding on to the Nordic, was holding on to his wrist. So when the ship came down to their head, they just went into the ship. So one by one, you can see the ship picking up the pilots and leaving the cavern system. And then while they were leaving, I could see the ship turning into different colors and mimicking the same color of the cavern. So they kind of disappear. And I'm like, "Holy shit, it's using like a type of cloaking type of style of mimicking, you know, the cavern. That's awesome." So it actually looked like a mist. It turned into like a moving mist. It was quite interesting looking at that and looking at the ship doing that, because it put me to thinking like, man, how many ships it's out there that we can't see? And they're moving around and we just can't see because they're mimicking the clouds or they're mimicking the blue sky. And they just look like mist, like a heat wave type of style when it moves. It looks like a heat wave mist. It's incredible. It's amazing.
So I just wanted to confirm. Okay, so this happened on Monday, April 15, this mission. And you're pretty sure that it was the same cavern complex in that Alabama region where I think it was about a year ago you described going to this giant spaceport and
yes,
all these Nordic ships, and they would go up through the mountain that was underneath a mountain, and that they would go up through the top of the mountain where there was a light beam or a holographic light beam that would display entering and leaving. Okay, so So that's the same base, or maybe you came into it from another entrance.
Yeah, right? We came in for another entrance, but yes, heading over there was the same way. So yeah, I'm sure it's the same base, but a different location of the base.
Okay.
It's a huge, huge base.
Okay. And I think last time, that last mission to that underground base, I think you said that these were Nordic craft and that they were going to start revealing themselves. And so,
yes.
Okay. So it seems like this mission that you just did on April 15, it's like this is where human pilots are going to be part of those ships going out there revealing themselves. Is that pretty much what the agenda is here?
I believe so, Doc. I believe that the time is going to come, or is here, that these ships are going to reveal themselves to certain kind of people, or maybe the news, or maybe to try to stop something that's happening.
And you mentioned that these pilots were kind of from all over the world. Some
sounds, yes, yes. But there was more United States pilots, of course. Yeah, there was more United States pilots training with these types of Nordic beings. They were wearing uniforms, but everybody was in civilian attire. But the Nordic, they were wearing the Air Force type of uniform that I saw when I saw that particular Nordic over there in Orlando and made contact with me and asked me to go into the ship. And I said, no, that I don't feel comfortable going into the ship. So I declined and he left. And that's when I took the picture of that particular ship that was flying. And that's the same type of ship that I saw in these caverns, the one that is reflecting the trees in the bottom.
Okay. Well, that's important because you actually have photos. People always say, you know, where's the photos proving any of this? You actually have a photo from that 2018 incident where that Nordic invited you to go on the ship. Okay, so these are the same ships. They're wearing the same uniforms. That this is a faction of the Nordics that works with the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. And the human pilots, they were different nationalities. So presumably some of those ships would just fly over the US. Other ships might be flying over the Middle East, over Russia.
Or maybe they'll fly straight up into the spatial area and fly to wherever country, wherever place that they desire.
Okay. All right. So this is like a coordinated international effort where all these pilots being given exposure to this American spaceport where there are all these Nordic flying saucer craft and they're given a chance to learn how to fly these craft and collaborate with the Nordics. So it sounds like a very big, important multinational mission.
Yeah, it's not like a mission. I think it looked more like a training. It looks like they've been doing this for a while. I just haven't seen it, but it looked like a training type of style of the way they were doing it because the pilots, they already knew the Nordics. They walked up to the Nordic raised up their hands, the ship comes down, and they disappear into the ship, and the ship flies away. So they've been doing this for a while. I just happened to go and see it with my own eyes. But I think this is going to be quite exciting when people start reporting these particular flying saucer-looking ships. And also on the side, I saw ball of orbs coming out from these ships. And I asked the guy, hey, do you know what these orbs are? What do they do? So what these orbs do, they come out from the bottom part of the ship. And they analyze the area before the ships go. So these orbs, they go and analyze and detect any danger for the ship. It could be any electronic or nuclear type of radiation or anything that bothers the ship for it to communicate. Because, you know, the ship is like a biological machine. It's alive. It has like a type of artificial intelligence that surpasses anybody mentality of thinking of technology. So the ships itself, they send these orbs out to investigate the area where they go prior. So they send out the orbs first, reconning, And then they go exactly to the spots where these orbs go. And I think these orbs have the ability to transport like ETs to certain locations as well. So it's quite interesting, the tool they have, these orbs that seem also really, really smart connected to the ship.
Okay, so the orbs are playing a kind of monitoring, surveillance role to make sure everything is okay around the ship. Now, you said that there were 32 people on the bus and most were pilots. So how many of you actually were just watching the pilots go to the Nordic spacecraft?
There was one guy behind me, and that's the guy that said, no, I'm not a pilot. And that was the guy I was asking the questions and asking, hey, what they're doing. He was telling me they're training. They're flying these ships. And that could probably explain why they crash so much, because they're so advanced that I guess the pilots can't comprehend how they work sometimes. And I guess sometimes they do crash. So I think the Nordics are really putting their ships on the line when they hand it over to these pilots.
Did that guy that was telling you about what the training exercise was all about, did he say anything about how the human pilots are able to fly the ships?
No, he wasn't telling me, but I remember when I entered into one of these ships, Nordic ships, I remember, you know, that ship that I entered by where I live, it can read you. It can feel you, and I guess you project it out of where you're going, and it goes where you project it to go. So it kind of knows where you want to go.
Okay, so kind of like interfaces with your mind. So it's a mind technology interface. You would have to have a pretty disciplined mind. It would take a lot of training to be able to fly one of those ships. You know, you couldn't just go there and say, okay, you know.
Oh, yes. I think these pilots have been out there already in our solar system. I heard them in the bus talking about different parts of our solar system, talking about Phobos. They were talking about flying around certain parts of Venus. So these pilots have been around, and they pilot other types of ships as well. So it's not just these ships that they pilot. They have a history of piloting other different things.
Okay, that's very interesting. I mean, Elena Danan talked about this Singaporean super soldier, Stephen Chua, who went, I think it was sometime around 1980, he went to Area 51, and he was trying to help Air Force pilots fly some of these fly-by-thought variations of it was an F-15 F-series, and that was had fly-by-thought technology. But they suffered brain damage because their brains weren't ready for it. They weren't developed or disciplined or trained, whereas Stephen Chua, he had plenty of gamma brainwave activity, so he could do it easily. But the American pilots or the other pilots couldn't do it without a drug, and that drug just messed up their minds. So that was kind of like, I think Stephen Chua said it was around, I think it was 1980 that happened. So that means in the last 44 years, this kind of fly-by-thought technology has been mastered.
Well, I believe they try to mimic, to put it on our ships, our jets, and our different type of flying, like TR-3B-like ships. And I guess that it didn't work out as good as when the humans fly the Nordic ships, that they already surpass the technology that we have. Yeah, reading the brain waves, reading your thoughts. And I think you have to be in a state of mind. Yeah, like you said, like a trained state of mind. I think that's why they fly with the Nordics. You know, if they pass out, the Nordics take over, and I guess they come back and the training is done. It was really, really interesting. I was looking around the port more, trying to see more details, and I was seeing different languages, and I was seeing like pictures of different people that have been there that they have on type of the wall, and it looked like more military, certain politicians, that I'm sorry that I didn't get the green light to share who are the peoples that visited these places already, that they're big names. I think everybody would know who if I say the name. But yeah, big people have visited these type of ports. So that was quite interesting seeing that wall.
Can you describe the languages you saw? Are we talking modern languages or are we talking ancient?
Yeah, modern languages. I think I saw Japanese. I saw like a type of Greek language, Arabic, Hebrew. I saw ancient also writings as well, Aztec style. What I was told, they also have inner earth people training also, but I think they come a different time and not the same time as the humans. So I believe other types of people come there to train as well, to fly their ships.
So do you know anything more about these Nordics? I mean, are we talking about Nordics that are based on the Earth, assisting the Air Force?
They're based on Earth and outer Earth. They're based on Earth and outer Earth. And these are the Nordics that are working with certain militaries around the world and also are in charge of some arcs that we talked about in the past.
Okay. All right. So these are, you don't know anything about them being connected in some way with the Galactic Federation of Worlds. You don't know of any connection with them. This sounds like it might be a completely different group altogether.
Negative. I haven't heard of that yet. I haven't asked. They probably are involved, but I don't like to like try to talk to them, like to
identify them.
Yeah, I don't want them to think that I'm trying to, how can I put this, like groupie them, you know? Yeah, categorize them, or, you know, they are who they are. If they are working for the Federation, yeah, I don't know that. Okay. I haven't asked that. So I guess next time I see them, I will ask. That'll be a good question to ask one of the Nordics to see, hey, are you connected with, you know, with the Federation and all that? Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be good. And, you know, what star system they come from.
I think it's more nations that are involved with the Ultimus Accords that are involved with these flying of these ships. That's the nations I saw.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. So we're talking,
yeah,
there's 36 nations that make up the Artemis Accords. So if you sign up the Artemis Accords, then some of your pilots can get to be trained. And it's interesting. I think 36 nations have signed, and you said there were 30 pilots out of the 32 people on the plane. So kind of like,
Doc, I think they're the best of the best, by the way that they're, how they were acting, like jocks type of dudes. I think they're like best of the best. Okay. I felt like I was in a Maverick movie.
Okay. All right. So there were 30 guys, 30 pilots on the bus that got off and went to the ships, and just the two of you stayed back and watched it all. So mm-hmm. what happened? You just kind of watched and looked around while they did their outer space mission, and then they came back?
Well, they left. I did not see them come back. And then they took me to a different room, and that's when I saw the orb. Like, you can clearly see the orbs coming out. They look like lightning, and they come out like in groups of two. And they just look at different spots, and then they go back to the ships. I was timing it. Like, every 30 minutes, these orbs, they come out. And it's kind of cool because they go through walls and shit. I'm like, wow, okay. They go through walls, and they go through, like, certain types of rock. And I could see a crystal-like cave system, you know? And I could see, like, a crystal. These orbs went to these caves, these types of crystals. And when they get close to the crystal lights up. And then the orbs leaves. It goes back to the ship. And you can still see the crystal lit up because of the orb interaction with the orb. And then it dims down. So I guess it was grabbing energy from the orb, or the orb was grabbing energy from the crystal. That was quite interesting. I think they're really, really hot. I had an orb get close, at least 10 feet from me, and I could feel the energy of the orb, electricity type energy that I felt in Brazil when I went close to a ship and I touched it. I started feeling the metallic in my tongue, my hair's going up, and this was just 10 feet away from me, these orbs. I think the energy that carries, it can kill somebody if you touch it directly. I guess when it interacts with you, it doesn't kill you. But if you approach it without it interacting with you, I think it could kill a person by the energy that it has. It has to approach you. You can't approach it.
Yeah, I remember that was something Tucker Carlson talked about, where he described the Stanford medical researcher, probably Dr. Gary Nolan, saying that he had treated about 100 Air Force personnel that had suffered traumatic brain injury or death when they interacted with UFOs. So that definitely is what happens. Okay, so you saw the orbs. So what else did you get to see in that cavern complex while you were there?
I saw a liquid type of substance on the floor. It looked like water that when you kick it around, it turned into like a ball substance. And I think this was coming from the ships. The ships, they sweat this liquid that falls down on the ground, and you could just kick it around. It's quite interesting. This type of liquid, it looks like water. It acts like an oil type of substance, but when you kick it around, it doesn't stick to your feet, but it stays to the location where you kick it around, and it's like it floats around. And they have this
mercury
like type of, it's not mercury. It looked like water. Mercury is like a it looked metalish. This you can still see through it. Yeah, they had like a vacuum looking machine that it had wheels, and this machine had a big type of drum in the back, and it was going left to right picking up this substance, and it was halfway full, and I was trying to ask the guy what it was, but I saw it dripping from some of these ships to the floor. So it came from the ships. So I don't know what substance it is. They recollect it, I guess, to do with them. Like, I don't know what this substance is, but yeah, I saw that. And it was quite interesting that we had a little machine with wheels picking it up, like vacuuming it up into a tank. So that was quite interesting. And I was wondering, why would they pick that up, and what is it for? Well, what can they be using with that can help us, you know? So I saw that, and, you know, while the pilots were leaving, the hours was passing by. You had pilots coming back, you had pilots going, so I was just seeing ships coming and going. It looked like an airport type of style training part, you know? So it's quite interesting.
Very interesting, because I just did a quick checkup on Wikipedia, and there's a thing called hydronium, which is like water has a hydrogen atom and two oxygen atoms to make that compound. But hydronium has one hydrogen and three oxygen. So it's kind of like an isotope of water. So I wonder if that's what it is. It's called H3O.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know about that. That's really interesting.
Yeah, it has similar properties to water, obviously, but it behaves in a very different way. Maybe you have to ask next time.
Yeah, it was quite interesting substance that I was looking at. Other than that, I didn't see nothing else. I do have a missed time in that trip, a gap of 2 hours. And that was when I was observing the orbs. I was in one spot, and then I ended up in another spot without knowing how I got there. So I don't question that when that happened, because I know I get downloads when I get home, and I know what happens after. So I'll probably get a download of what happened those 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Actually, I just misspoke when I was describing hydronium. It actually has three hydrogen atoms and one oxygen atom, but still it's based on water. So just to be exact. Okay.
So would it look or move similar to water, or does it look like water, or?
Well, I just looked it up. Yeah, H3O it's a kind of isotope of some special type of water. So yeah.
And who's doing the research now, Doc, of that substance, you know?
It actually is a compound of water. It's called a protonation of water. I'm not a chemist, so I really am out of my depth here in describing what it is, but it's some kind of compound or isotope of water. Very interesting.
Interesting. Yeah. So yeah, these ships are dropping those all over the floor. But yeah, it kind of moves like Mercury. So it was quite interesting on different types of rock. I saw a type of mushrooms that was growing. It was like a blue type of mushroom that was growing on the side of the walls of this particular cavern. So I don't know if that can point out what type of cavern this is, or I guess the oxygen level. I think the oxygen level was really rich. I felt really, really awake in this cavern. I think the ship has a way of creating oxygen, because that particular cavern that was in when the ships were in, I felt like I don't know if you've ever been to an oxygen bar.
Oh, yes, I have.
So you get that same feeling in this particular room. So I think these ships, they sweat oxygen as well and give oxygen as well. So that is quite interesting.
Right, and you had a missing time experience as well while you're there with the orbs.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a missing time. So going back home, there was a total of 18 of us. There were still people flying and doing, I guess, training or mission, whatever the hell they were doing. We drove back home into the spot that they picked us up. And over us, we saw a 2R3B was flying really low. And I think one of the pilots that were coming back, he was saying that he was going to fly that. I guess the ship knows where the pilot is in every time. I don't know. They're like pets. I don't know how to put this, Doc. It is insane how this technology is. And the pilot was saying, yeah, that's my TR-3B. And we saw him. It was flying over the bus to the location that they're going to drop off. And I said, are you going to fly it now? He's like, yeah, I'm just going to 15 minutes. I'm going to meet up and we're going to trade in. So I guess, yeah. they trade and they fly, and yeah, these pilots are cool.
Well, that's interesting, because I know with the Nordic ship or the ET ships that they have an organic consciousness that matches with the DNA of the crew of the pilots. So it sounds like the TR-3Bs or whatever this model is of this triangle-shaped craft, that they maybe a more advanced version that includes this kind of organic that bonds with the pilot or crew?
Yeah, the color, it wasn't completely black. I saw it was a grayish blue color type of ship, but it's a similar size of a TR-3B. Triangular. It looks just like a TR-3B, but it's more smoother, more rounder. It's not rigid. I can see the light still in the middle and the three lights on each corner. So it was like a type of TR-3B, quite interesting kind of ship. I could clearly see it because it was giving down a light and it was like making us notice that it was flying above us. So I don't know if it's a type of protection of us, because after we parked and we got out the bus, there was a couple of 60s that flew over us also, I think protecting the area.
Okay. So the bus arrived at the destination where you got on.
When we arrived on the destination, there was a total of 5 of us, but 18 left. The bus was dropping people in certain locations that I didn't know the location they were dropping them off.
Okay.
You know, yeah.
But it ended up at the location, the base where you work, right?
Close. Yeah. Close to the, yeah.
Wow.
So I started going home. And I had a car following me back to my house, making sure I was safe. And I think that this was a big deal, what I saw. And that same time, I drove back to the base and I met up with the person that tells me that the green light. He says, yeah, you have the green light to talk about that. Don't talk about the details that you saw on the walls. Just talk about that the United States have the capability of these ships. Yeah.
So that's awesome. And that's worth emphasizing that you're not really a whistleblower because, you know, while you're active U.S. Army and you're talking about these missions, that you're being given the green light by a superior officer who's involved in the chain of command of these covert missions.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I even took you to the location where he talks to me.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I went on that base. He took my wife and I there, and you showed us that location. And yeah, hopefully one day I can meet the officer. But right now, I mean, this all has to be confidential. But it does mean that there is a covert branch of the U.S. military that is...
I could say that he does travel to Washington, D.C. a lot.
Okay.
I could say that. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Hope he doesn't get bothered by me saying that, but hey, hundreds of people go to Washington, D.C., you know?
Yes, yes. Well, that's good to know that there are people within the covert military that are wanting this information to get out. And yeah, people always wanting for there to be disclosure. We all are impatient for it. But at the moment, it sounds like for senior officers to come out and openly reveal it, it would be too dangerous. But having...
Yeah, it is. It is dangerous for them. You know, I guess what David Grush did, you know, it's really hard to come out like that. You know, I feel sorry for the guy. Yeah, I guess he took it on himself to come out. And I think sooner or later, there's going to be much more people coming out of all this information. You know, we've been saying that, you know, all this has to come out.
And of course, in the case of David Grush, I mean, he really hasn't had the kind of access to these classified programs like you have, like you've actually been on the mission.
I'm sure he has, but he's like really hesitant to talk about certain things that he did saw and that he was involved in.
Oh, were you told by someone? Someone said that David Grush was part of some of these missions?
I haven't been told that, but I'm sure he has. And he also has like a green light, red light system that talks to him and tells him what to say and what not to say. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure, you know, to be in the position that he did and where he did it, I'm sure he has been through different experiences.
Well, we're very glad that you come forward and talk about these experiences and that there are people in the military that are, you know, protecting you and making sure that everything is okay as you disclose this stuff. So anything you want to say to our Portuguese and Spanish friends?
Sure. Tudo bem para todo o Brasil. Eu amo muito vocês. Muito beijos. Abraço. Aí, eu acho que a tradução vocês vai ter pronto. Muito obrigado por me seguir. Eu amo muito vocês. Gracias por todo que están escuchando este mensaje, este tipo de entrenamiento que hicimos los otros días. Y ojalá que puedan sacar más información y puedan tener experiencias igual como yo. Yeah, I basically say that I'm glad that they're hearing this information in your channel and there's going to be more things coming out. Let's see what happens on Earth, you know, on top. I was talking on my channel. I was saying that. I said, imagine what the inner Earth people think about us when they see us going to war and see us dying of hunger, see us living to 80 years old. You know, imagine what they feel when they see that from us. You think somebody would want to communicate with us if we're going through all these situations on Earth? You know, black hats versus white hat, outer solar system, things happening to people, death. It's insane what's happening on Earth. And I kind of agree with certain civilizations not communicating with us. And I kind of understand their point of view. They help who they want to help, Doc. and who wants to be helped and who wants to search for the truth. So they are going to communicate with people that want this, not the people that are negative.
Very, very true. So I want to thank you, JP, for your service and your courage in coming forward and revealing all of this incredible information.
No problem, Doc. It was a really pleasure talking to you. And I love everybody. Hug and kisses to everybody.
You have been listening to Exopolitics Today with Dr. Michael Sala. Please remember to like, share, and subscribe to this channel. Join or start a conversation in the comments. Take the time to explore the vast library of best-selling books, webinars, and podcasts by Dr. Sala. Visit exopoliticstoday.com.